Journalism Now, number 22, and we're going to be talking about mobile web apps and perhaps how some payment models can come into that. And on the call, we have Steve Outing of Editor and Publisher, and Stephanie Rosenblatt of the Miami Herald, and Ellen Angelotti of the Poynter Institute. So Steve brought this up after seeing Men's Health's new exercise iPhone app. So I'll just turn it over. So Steve, give us a rundown of how the app works and kind of what that got you to thinking about in terms of incremental pay models.
I got interested in this topic because I think for news publishers, mobile is going to be incredibly important. You know, if worldwide last year, there are 1.2 billion cell phones sold versus 300 million PCs. So you can see how important this is going to be for us. And again, what's particularly important about mobile phones is that they are getting more sophisticated. So we're having more smartphones like the iPhone and the Google Android phones. And just in the last year, June a year ago, smartphones represented about 11.2% of the total market. And in 1 year, they went up to 14.4%. So you can pretty well imagine that in a year or two, a lot of people are going to have smartphones. And so the just great opportunities to build more mobile apps. And, you know, what's interesting is that we've been having this debate going on with news web publishers, and a lot of the older, more traditional news organizations have really been lobbying hard lately to start charging on the web. And we'll probably have the same argument with mobile, I think. So I just thought it'd be interesting to talk a bit about what we do with the mobile strategy. I mean, I tend to think that for mobile applications like you have on the say the iPhone, where you buy them off the iTunes store or the App Store, excuse me. Some of the same principles I suspect may still apply, where even on the phone, just like on the web, there's still going to be a lot of different ways that you can get your news. So that if just some news publishers start charging, they that may not work out so well just because there'll be so many other free sources. But I think that a more freemium model on cell phones actually could make a lot of sense. And what Dave referred to at the beginning was this recent app that came out for the iPhone called Men's Health Workouts. And what you do is you buy it for 99 cents and you put it on your iPhone, and it gives you 18 like exercise modules, and it kind of tells you different things to do to get, and then it tracks your exercises through this program. And for 99 cents, you get 18 of these different exercise modules. But within the application itself, you can buy these additional modules. So for example, there's one about how to get yourself in shape to be a better golfer, and that's an extra $1.99. So I think that brings up a whole interesting business model that we can apply to these things. And this all started when Apple came out with the 3.0 operating system for the iPhone, which made it possible for iPhone app developers to kind of do these add-on things within the applications. So I was just thinking about some of the news applications for that. And yeah, just a couple of quick examples, and then maybe we can talk about it. Let's say you've got a news application, the New York Times, and they charge you 99 cents for the application. And then maybe it has one free crossword every day, but you're a crossword aficionado, and then you could pay 50 cents or a dollar to go back in archives and choose it, download another one to play. Lots of other, examples of what you could do with that sort of thing. For example, that application, the news might be free overall, but yet on the phone, if you want to actually say comment or participate in a discussion or a chat or something, then maybe that's something you have to pay extra for. You can also pay for extra content. For example, most of the news might be free, but maybe there's also some niche industry specialty news that they might charge for, similar to what Financial Times does, that sort of thing. So I just thought it might be interesting to talk about some possibilities for what sort of things that we as news publishers could charge for. I mean, we're struggling with that on the web, and mobile's a little bit different, but I thought it might be interesting to have a discussion about what sort of things we can charge for.
Well, Stephanie, do you or the Herald team have any mobile apps or, components of what you're already doing that you want to incorporate mobile or geo services? Do you have anything you all are working on right now?
We do have an app in development, and it is not strictly news-based. I'm not going to go into detail about it because, we're going to wait for it to come out, but it is not just a simple, news reader. And Steve, I completely agree with you on the idea that for news organizations, when we're talking about mobile apps, I don't there doesn't seem like there's any possibility of charging just for news. There are already major news organizations out there that have, I think what the Washington Post, New York Times, and a few others already have, USA Today too, right? Have iPhone apps out there that are free that give you the news. So that is one of the great things about the new 3.0 release is that it's a gateway for other types of applications. A news organization should offer a mobile app with that is free on on the base level when you download it from the App Store that gives you the news. But like you're saying, Steve, any sort of add-ons or extra applications can be right there in a menu that people can purchase separately. And so, where I see mobile technology going is, well, the whole benefit of having a cell phone on you is the fact that you take it with you everywhere, and there, so it's connecting you to everything else. And the fact is, when you have it with you everywhere, most smartphones now do have GPS in them, so you know exactly where you are, pinpointing, on a map of the world, latitude and longitude. So I think that harnessing the GPS technology is going to be the key for developing new applications. The men's health one is great, and it's a great model for that magazine. But once one magazine does it, or once one news organization does something like that, I think it's going to be like news cannibalism. If everyone starts doing it, you're not going to make a lot of money on it. There's going to be one best one, and that's it. So you have to grab a niche, and Men's health got that one. So the app market that's already out, those 55,000 apps, they're all, pretty much they're self-contained, where you purchase it, you get the information, it can record your thing, it can record your workouts, whatever, but it doesn't change after a while. It gives you, what's there, and that's it. So the benefit of what like social media is the fact that everything's user generated. And if news organizations can build applications that allow users to comment and communicate with each other based on perhaps an event they're at, let's say there's a music app where people who go to a lot of who are going to a really big show, or perhaps people who are at a sports game and there's a reporter on the scene, commenting on the celebrities at the entertainment show, and people can, if they're in the area, they can get notified that there's like a celebrity around, or if they're at a sports game and there's a reporter play by play commenting on things, and there can be an application where users can comment with the reporter and comment between each other in real time on the sports. Could replace say the old school radio in the ear, radio commentary in the ear while you're watching a football game in the stadium. I know a lot of guys do that, but if they have a smartphone and they can get that radio commentary on their phone, what would be radio commentary on their phone, and then write back, and anyone who's on, if they have an application and they're in the area on your team or another team can like kind of battle it out. Hey, that could be a lot of fun. So, I mean, I think that GPS located communication based on events and news sold within a mobile application that's originally free, that has general news from a news organization is kind of like a pretty decent model.
I thought of a cool idea, Stephanie, with especially, Miami, and you mentioned stuff like sporting events and interacting there. What about taking the concept of, trivia night at the local sports bar and bringing that into the sporting event scenario where you want to participate in this trivia game at the sporting event? That's done through some sort of, a mobile app. You have to be located actually in the vicinity to do it. And then the traditional news company, which, we have so much information about sports teams and sports stats and history and the good columnists, that's what's feeding the content of these trivia quizzes and doing things of like if you, pay the buck to get into this trivia tonight, fed by the Miami Herald. And whoever wins, or the top three people, or whoever win prizes, or something like that. I think that could be the sort of thing where, like you're saying, you're not giving away the new, you're not giving away information or trying to charge for information, but you're providing some sort of utility based on location. I think that could be cool.
Also, to one of the things that Stephanie was saying about the app being free itself. Yes, most of the news apps right now, New York Times, Washington, Wall Street Journal, whatnot, those are free apps. But it also makes me think that charging 99 cents to get the app actually could bring in a decent amount of money. Of course, there's, if somebody is really cheap and they don't want to spend 99 cents, they just on the iPhone, they would fire up Safari and they would go to the mobile version of the New York Times website. But maybe the New York Times iPhone or Android app would be a better experience than that, and better functionality, and that might be worth paying the extra 99 cents for. I know I buy apps all the time because that price is so cheap. It's just a no-brainer. It's like if it looks interesting, I'll buy it. I've wasted a dollar, big deal. So, I suspect that a big news organization like the New York Times, if they started charging the $1.99 for a app that is a better interface to the news, where they're not charging for the basic news, even now. With the iPhone alone, people can make a lot of money by selling 99-cent apps. And then once we start seeing a lot more Android and other smartphones, selling apps, I think that market could be huge. So I would feel like, say, the New York Times, for example, if it's offering a better experience with the app than using the browser on the phone, that sell it for 99 cents and you could end up making quite a bit of money.
Well, my idea is a little bit similar to what you guys are talking about, and having, the free app that you can download, then have like features that you could upgrade for different prices. And I just think of, the apps that I have bought. I usually buy them because of the gee-whiz factor, like Urban Spoon. I mean, there are a million different apps that you can get to find restaurants in your area. But when you use Urban Spoon, you can shake it, and it's like a slot machine. So it has that visual element that makes use of that the phone's the accelerometer, and like Ocarina, it's like the flute that you can blow in. So I think it'd be really cool if a news organization could find ways to really make use of, like, the touch screen and some way when you turn the phone upside down, it would help you find news in a different way or something. So I think, like, making use of the actual tool itself and to the full advantage would be something that I think that news organizations could charge a little bit for, because people would be interested in checking it out. That curiosity is what drives me to buy a lot of apps, and so finding ways to do that would be really cool.
I was sitting in the Harry Potter movie yesterday. I know, don't judge me. And I was killing some time beforehand during the previews, and just I downloaded, it was free, but a little Nickelodeon has a SpongeBob SquarePants app. And it's just simple stuff of, like, you tilt the iPhone and SpongeBob, like, tries to slide off. He starts to slide off the screen and holds on. And, obviously that's not very
And he pulls
newsy.
up, he jumps, and
Exactly. But just of making it where it's not just a prettier feed reader, but of, right, harnessing the functionality of the device. And another cool idea that a friend of mine who we had on, gosh, I guess it's 2 months ago now, for talking about the hype machine, Taylor McKnight. He also runs another application site called Sked. And what this thing is, it's kind of this more modern event scheduling app, so that instead of just having a big grid when you go to a conference, it's all web-based so that you can decide, I want things that are panels or workshops or whatever it might be, and you can see everything, read everything, and when you like it, you can build your personalized schedule, and then you have your profile page, so you can see, here's what I want to go to, and sometimes you might have a conflict and you have to choose between. You can also make it public so that other people who are attending the event, you can just say, hey, here's where I'll be, if you so choose. But something they're talking about doing is doing an iPhone app almost specifically to allow off network storage of the information, because you can already now use the web browser and get it in a really nice, pretty mobile friendly format. But if you've ever been to like a big techie conference like South by Southwest, I mean, getting data there is nearly impossible. Or you're at a sporting event and you're trying to have some big stat application that the Miami Herald did, and you're trying to get like crazy detailed stats about all the Miami Heat players, pretty good chance you're not going to have data. Same thing, Florida Gators games, you never get data here. But of making it where if you buy the app and you pay a little bit extra, then you're getting this offline data store so that even if you don't have signal, you can interact with the data, you could tag, post comments, you know, do offline tasks, and then when you get back on network, it synchronizes it with your online profile. A lot like what the Adobe Air apps do and Google Gears, stuff like that. So I think that's definitely something we should be looking at too, of making the on-network, off-network experience a little bit smoother.
And also, you know, like the bump feature, I love like the bump chat, you know, where if I have bump and you have bump and we hit our phones together, we can transfer information. How cool would that be if, you know, you had the free app, but you, for each story you bump to somebody else, you'd get, you know, you'd either, I guess you wouldn't want to pay for that, but you'd earn points to upgrade your app or something like that. So it'd be encouraging people to share stories and think about using the device to connect people using the mobile technology too.
Or win prizes for referrals. Hey, Steve, because we don't have in Gainesville, but Steve and us and Stephanie, I guess all of you, have you used Foursquare much, or do you have it available in your cities?
No.
Okay, the basic premise is it's one of these geo services similar to like a Brightkite, a Looped, and it's by the people who did Dodgeball before, I'm pretty sure. I'm not super familiar on Foursquare since I don't use it a lot, since we don't have it. But the idea is that it, based on geo services, it allows you to kind of interact with your city in some ways. And TechCrunch, I think, had an article today about Foursquare in particular, that for bars, restaurants, social sites, coffee shops, whatever it might be, that are in the network, in the Foursquare for that city, people can become like the mayor by patronizing that thing the most. So basically what you do is if you're sitting at a location and you update your location, it knows that, okay, well, you're in this, this radius of this location, so you're at this local coffee shop. And then based on the amount of times that you've updated your location within there, they like name you as the mayor because you go there all the time. So if it's a bar you frequent all the time and you're the mayor, there's a special screen you get on your mobile device that tells you you're the mayor. And if you walk up to the bartender and you show them that you're the mayor, your first drink of the night is free. And so that concept, I think, is just tremendously cool of, as we've talked about, you know, ever since we started this podcast, of how news companies can get into more of a facilitator role with small business. I mean, that would be the sort of thing that would be an awesome app for any of our cities to have, I think.
I definitely think everything that you've talked about with pairing the newspaper organizations with local venues and the local trivia and the mayor thing, all those are, that's really fascinating. Linking more people in the community to the applications would probably be a very, well, not probably, it would be a big step forward. As for the bumping, Ellen, I can see how maybe bumping stories back and forth could be abused a little bit. Perhaps there would be a limit. I guess that would all be stuff you would talk about when you're developing it. But it would be cool to share news stories. I actually think that one of the things that we could do for that would be a lot more successful on a mobile app compared to online, maybe, because there are so many portals online at this point, is you know, I know like the New York Times has tried to do like a My New York Times type thing, but a lot of people get their news through feeders through news readers or Google News or things like that. But if you did get a news application for 99 cents, because I agree with you, Steve, that people will chuck out 99 cents on pretty much anything. You know, let's say you bought the news application, but inside the application, it remembered the trends of what you read. And so basically you could end up with a customized news interface on your mobile app because it's, you know, proprietarily yours, if you wanted, you know, and you could flip back and forth between recommendations that it's giving you based on your past reading trends, and also, you know, like front page or section by section news on your mobile device.
Yeah, I'd been thinking too about kind of the idea of personalization being a great sort of add-on that people might pay for. You know, one thing that my local news organizations don't give me is if there's some little crime in my neighborhood, let me say within a mile of me, or even if, you know, a house is just sold. And I was thinking about everyblock.com, which was the night-funded project by Adrian Holovaty, which digs into local data and allows you to map it. You know, I can certainly imagine paying for a phone alert, you know, an additional phone alert service that tells me whenever some little new thing happens in my neighborhood. Maybe I specify, you know, anything within 2 miles of me. I want to learn about, whether it's, you know, a restaurant that failed a public health inspection or a bike stolen, you know, that sort of stuff. I think I could definitely see paying for that.
Well, I think that framework, like you said, Steve, of, you know, we're all pretty familiar with how every block works, but that sort of thing where, like, and with the iPhone 3 OS, where you can do the incremental payments by topic category or by niche, that just seems tremendously awesome.
Well, yeah, I mean, think about it. I mean, what has been used to be a huge source of revenue for newspapers? Classifieds, right? Classifieds, garage sales, coupons. What if there was a garage sale app that, you know, based on your location, you could set a radius on your phone, and, you know, when you, an encouragement for people to post their garage sales in the newspaper would be, hey, if you do this and, you know, you pay this amount, then it'll be on people's mobile devices too. And people can, you know, set like a 2 mile, 5 mile, 10 mile, 25 mile radius and say, I want to look for all the garage sales right now in this area.
One of my biggest frustrations is, you know, I love the Google Maps that a lot of people are creating, and I wish, I haven't been able to find a way to get those Google Maps, like, you know, you can map, when I go to a new city, I'll usually map the places I want to go on a Google Map, but then I can't get it onto my mobile phone. So if a news organization was doing something like that, where they had, you know, specialized maps that you could import onto your, you know, or if they had an interface that just pulled in all of those garage sales, or, you know, you could do the same with restaurants, or you could do the same with so many things. That would be a great idea, and it'd give people an incentive to put their garage sale in the paper instead of on Craigslist or something.
You know, there actually are some garage sale apps, at least in the iPhone store right now, and they seem to be. If you go to them, they're still kind of suffering from the ghost town effect, because it's some developer who came up with the idea and opened it up, and, you know, if I look in Boulder, I'm not going to find anything. Say local newspapers may not need to develop these things themselves, but simply the technology for these things, for these apps, is already out there. So it may just be, you know, you going and licensing that technology and then using it locally. You just mentioned getting kind of the garage sales on the newspaper. You know, that's great. Right now, they're nearly all on Craigslist, at least on Craigslist cities. So you're probably going to have to have the application tap the garage sale information from Craigslist, as well as if you're a newspaper, as well as the ones you're collecting.
That's true, but that's doable. I mean, that's not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
At all. And like you said, Dave, you can do the same thing with coupons too. You're going out for lunch, pinpoint your GPS point, put in a radius, and say, give me deals. Possibly.
Mm-hmm. The tough thing that that's going to be, and you always hear it with so many things like this is the year of. And I was gotten a conversation a little bit on Twitter last week about, well, this is going to be the year of mobile, that all these location-based services are going to come into the fray, and you'll be able to find every bit of information you want that's close to you, just how you want it. You know, the stuff that like kind of we're talking about and hoping for. But there's a huge technical roadblock in the way of developing for a million different platforms. I mean, like, Apple is so good at what it does, and the operating system is stable because there's, you know, four different hardware pieces of hardware it has to develop for. So it's really easy to make it stable, and that's the what plagues a lot of the, you know, Windows, is that it's making it for every piece of hardware that exists, and so, you know, it just can't provide as polished of a service. And if anybody who's ever done any sort of website development or just simple design, trying to get it to look the same and work the same across Firefox, Internet Explorer, Safari, getting that can be a pretty big challenge for an application. Thank goodness we've got stuff like jQuery and some of these frameworks that make it easier. But I can't even imagine the amount of hair I would lose if I was trying to program mobile apps that worked on iPhone, BlackBerry, you know, across platform. So I don't know how we get started on this. Is it going to have to be that that's whoever's building the app or the newspaper has to choose, okay, well, we're going to do this one for the iPhone, and we're going to do a separate app for the Palm Pre. But it's not really going to be able to be totally the same app across the two. It'll be close. And how do users who are on one talk with users who are on the other? I mean, I'm sure we can work that stuff out, but it's going to definitely make it a bit harder to get going with having just the really good ideas.
I wish I could remember the names, but I know I've seen at least a couple of specialty companies, developers who do develop mobile apps across the different platforms. So, you know, it's maybe one of those situations where for the news publishers, they just don't have the depth of technology expertise in-house that they can do it themselves. So, you know, but this vendor community seems to be building up outside, and you may just have to, it may not be cheap, but you may have to go to some outside company to handle that sort of stuff. But it's probably possible, even today.
Sure, or maybe come up with some between different newspaper companies that you might have one shop that's, you know, really focused on iPhone apps, but someplace else. Like I know at the LA Times, they're doing some Palm Pre stuff. So if you had different papers, even if from different companies, that could come to some sort of what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and create some sort of, you know, overlapping app shop that helps facilitate the cross-platform apps. And that maybe that could be a way to keep it in-house instead of farming everything out. Because if we make all these apps but just farm out the coding to other people, then it's not really going to be able to generate any money.
I mean, I think it's a good idea. I mean, it's kind of like talking about like having some sort of independent news organization that brings some, you know, mobile app developers and who also have journalism background together, and, you know, it'd be a hub where people can, like, I mean, they can collaborate, and that group can develop for different platforms. And I mean, that could actually be a good idea for like a night grant. When you're talking about something like Every Block is the site, you know, built on the Django framework, and now everyone wants to take, you know, the bits and pieces from that and build something of their own. Well, if that independent organization could build some sort of like really generic, I mean, but good, like, you know, flashy, everything that we were talking about, apps for different things, you know, for different mobile devices, and then it would take a programmer or two in the actual news organizations to tweak it to their advantage. We should be all about being efficient and, you know, saving time and money and working together. I mean, journalism is journalism. So yeah, I thought your cliche phrase, "What's good for the goose is geese," or goose,
"What's good for the goose is good for the gander."
Right, it's good for the gander. I mean, I think I love the philosophy, so I think it's a good idea.
You know, the university system might be able to help us out in that respect. I was thinking about Northwestern University and the program that Rich Gordon has there, where I think he got some night funding, and, you know, he's bringing in computer programmers to actually, I think maybe give them scholarships, or, you know, really get them involved in sitting together and working with the journalists, so the computer folks start to learn what a little more about journalism and the journalism folks kind of maybe can be really creative about what they need, and the two groups communicating together can come up with a lot of the type of stuff that we're talking about. And I've heard about initiatives like that going on at various journalism schools around the country, and hopefully some stuff will come out of those programs that can then be utilized out in the commercial markets, in the commercial marketplace.
With the collaboration being good for everybody, I think we've seen a lot of that success with open source software. And I used to be a scuba instructor when I was going through my master's degree before I had kids, and what reinforced a lot of these kind of membership continuing ed things is that other dive stores are not your competitor. People going hunting and fishing and skydiving and whatever else it might be, other hobbies are your competitor, not other dive shops. And that's much the same way if you've ever seen and wondered of, like, why are CVS and Walgreens always across the street from each other? Because by them central, being in the same spot, regardless of what side of the road you're on, I need toothpaste, I'm going to one of these. And so it's better for business for both of them in the long run. And that's something I wish we could get a bit more of, is not thinking that, well, if this paper scoops, it's a lot of tradition. If this paper scoops us, then we've lost and they're the competitor and we've got nothing. But, it should be more of, oh, good job getting it this time. We'll work harder and we'll get something better the next time. Because just cooperation is just good for the industry as a whole, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think as we move forward, we're going to start seeing a lot more of that. I mean, that's a generic statement, but it's true. I hope.
I had one other thing I wanted to mention, which is like a lot of times when people build these things, and you see this in most of the mobile apps that are out there now, there's maybe there's a free version and then there's an upgraded version. So one is free and one is $2.99. And I think that we can think of along the lines of different tiers, because a big news organization like the New York Times, for example, has a lot of different readers. Some of them are not going to pay a dime, or maybe they'll pay 99 cents and that's all you'll ever get out of them. Some people will maybe be willing to pay an extra, $5 in order to have the app turn on the ability to search the New York Times archives. Maybe there's even a $100 tier, which is gets you much more in-depth Wall Street news. So I think if we think creatively that with this freemium type model, that there can be a lot of different audiences that you can serve, and each one may have a different price point that they're willing to go.
I'm totally with you. There's no reason why it has to be 99 cents or $5 for access or $10 as one set level. That seems silly with all the things we're talking about as customization. It should be really easy and obvious for somebody to decide what it's worth, what services they want. Like cable TV, it does a decent job that if I want this grouping of channels, I pay the extra couple bucks. Not quite to the totally a la carte level yet, but I think that sort of thing is what we should be focused on for charging, is to give the user very discrete control over what they think is valuable.
One thing that might be important is to keep the different tiers fairly simple and not try and piecemeal people. There's been a lot of criticism about micropayments and that it's causes you to have to make too many decisions. And I occasionally do a little research on classifieds, and that's one of the big problems with newspaper classifieds, is that a lot of them can, to this day, continue to charge, here's an extra dollar for boldface or an extra $5 for picture, and they're going toward a much more simplified model where you've got tier A is $5 and tier B is 10 and tier C is 20, and you get extra value for that, but you probably want to keep it fairly simple.
Yeah, agreed. I think iStockPhoto does a pretty good job of that. It's a really probably one of the main go-to sites for buying stock photos, illustrations, video. They have audio now. What they do is that photos or illustrations, depending on how good it is X amount of credits. So when you're paying for them, you can say, well, I don't use it that often, like me, and I want to buy 10 credits, so here's my 10, 12 bucks, and it's about a buck a credit. But if you buy in bulk because you're a professional, you know, you can buy in pretty big bulk discounts or get to the point of, you know, if you're doing this stuff every day, you can buy subscription fees of, for them, it could be quite pricey, you can imagine, with stock photo stuff, but say $100 a month and you can use whatever you want or whatever it might be. And clearly that depends on what service you're selling, but I make it easy for them to decide, to be able to choose between the different packages, but give them as discrete control over what they want, I think, as possible without making it confusing.
I agree, and I also think kind of along the same lines is integrate it into what they're already using. You know, a couple years ago, everyone was creating their own social networks and all these groups, and we did that on our site too. And, you know, no one wanted to go and join another set of groups when they were already on like Facebook or Twitter. And so I think just being aware of like where your audience already is and how you can incorporate what you do into that and not just try to get them to come, you know, register on your site and do that too. I think that that's also something to take into consideration. So when they're using, you know, whatever device it is, whether it's their computer, their phone, their Kindle, whatever, figuring out, understanding how they're using it and demonstrating that you understand how they use it by giving them an application that they can integrate into their habits that are already existing, I think will set news organizations up for success.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of the Amazon Kindle purchases now, where you can get them on the iPhone and they're synced. So if you buy a Kindle book, you can read it on either of the two devices, and then the devices are actually synced so that if I start reading a book on the Kindle and then I'm out on a train with my iPhone, I just pick up the book on the iPhone and it remembers what page I'm on, that sort of thing. So that kind of integration, it could, again, as you said, can really set publishers up for success if they do that sort of thing.
That is really cool. I mean, that could tie in with what we were saying earlier really quickly. I mean, if you have a login on a news site, which most news sites do, I think, or even if they don't, if you are logged in on a news site and you're reading the news and it tracks what you're reading, you know, it can, I mean, that kind of stuff can go back and forth too. Suggestions, sections that you like, I don't know, what you've read, what you haven't read.
Well, what you say and what you're saying there, Stephanie, kind of makes me think about Facebook Connect, how a lot of, you know, in NPR, they're using Facebook Connect now. So when people log on, right now, I think they have to log on to the NPR site and they have to log into their Facebook account, but they're trying to get it where you log on only using your Facebook information. And so when you comment on an article, it gives you your real name because it's associated with your Facebook page. And so you're able to authenticate who's posting comments more than somebody who would just log onto the site, put in an email address, and then put barely any information. So it's adding a level of credibility to commenting, and it's easier to log in and make comments and engage with the site because more people have a Facebook account than they would an NPR account. So I thought that was something that's really interesting. And I've seen, you know, Mashable is using Discus or Discuss to do something similar. And these are free, you know, you just copy a little bit of code and you can put them on any site. And, you know, all you have to do is log in with, you know, your Twitter account or your Facebook account, and you can engage with the site. So I think, you know, just the whole idea of logging into a site and, you know, no matter what device it is, just making it a part of the habit or the habit that your audience already has.
That's a great idea. I mean, imagine if you're on a train and you're reading a news article and you can have it and it posts to your Facebook, you know, Steve is on, you know, on a train in Philadelphia reading about, you know, some news story, like, you know, whatever is going on, you know, some news story, and people can see where you are, what you're reading, or if you're at a convention reading things that are out there, if we have the authorization where you can log in and it automatically posts out, and that's a good like good track backing for news articles as well. Because if it posts out and it says this person is reading this article and the article's linked back to the news site, people, you know, I think people are more, well, I think people are more likely to click back through that to the news article.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would necessarily want people to know everything that I'm reading, but right now, I have to proactively post to Twitter and Facebook and say this is a cool article, go look at it. But I mean, maybe a more automated approach is if there's a little rating thing at the bottom, and if I rate an article 4 or 5 stars, then it automatically does send it out to my social network and with very little effort on my part to say, oh, Steve really liked this particular article. I can see that being pretty useful and spreading the word nicely on behalf of the publisher.
This is just a totally fascinating topic, and we could probably talk for 20 hours on mobile devices. And hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll do another show on another more directed or maybe more generic, I don't know, something more on mobile devices. And definitely want to hear all your thoughts on any apps that you're working on, apps you've seen, apps you want, whatever it might be that ties in with this concept of geolocation and syncing between devices and customization. Whatever cool app, news apps you've seen, definitely let us know. And the easiest way to give us feedback is probably on Twitter. Just use a hashtag of Journalism Now, and I'll definitely find it. Or, you know, reply to any of us so we can engage you and have a conversation. You can also leave comments on the podcast's website if you'd like to. But definitely let's keep the conversation going, as I think it's fascinating. And just like you started out, Steve, it's just mobile really is where we're all going, and so much is going to be happening over the next year. So hopefully you're listening and you enjoy the show, and you'll be with us next week. Thanks.